WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast here on a Thursday night. We're recording this one after a really, really busy week. AJ Myers alongside Griffin Bluestein and Josh Rothert. Thanks for having us in once again. Another busy week, as I just mentioned, here on the Hill. Plenty of Syracuse athletics happening. Men's soccer. Got to bring up men's soccer because I love soccer. It's one of my favorite sports. They got a huge win Wednesday night in the ACC tournament. They advance and move on. So prop to Ian McIntyre's group. They had a great win, Griffin. And outside of that, it was not the only exciting thing happening on campus in the broadcasting realm as well. It was a pretty busy week.
It was. We had some special guests here on campus. Tuesday was the Marty Glickman Awards, and Voice of the Orange and professor at the Newhouse School, Matt Park, took that home and saw the likes. A lot of famous alums, WAER guys coming back. Jason Benetti, who came on the pod last year, Drew Carter, and then just some smaller guys. If you ever heard Bob Costas,
Marv Albert.
I don't know if you ever heard of those people before. Dan Hoard, also a legend as well. Sean McDonough. I'm not sure if you've heard of that guy. This guy, Ian Eagle. So there were some big names back on campus, which is really cool. We got to interact with a lot of them and listen to them speak about WAER. A couple of them came to the station and then just talk about their careers and overall the life of a broadcaster. So it was fun, a fun week, busy week for us, you know, with that thrown in, sandwiched between basketball games and football games and a couple other things going around here on the Hill. And so it's been a fun week.
Josh, did you have a as exciting week as maybe all the alums here had?
I didn't. My goal was to shake Mike Tirico's hand, but classes made that a little difficult, so I didn't get it this time. But I'm sure he'll be back around. It was great to be in the presence of that many people. I mean, I don't know if you saw the picture of them in the Sports Media Center, having all of those people in one picture. You can't beat it, and that's why Newhouse right there.
No, without a doubt, it's one of the big reasons what makes the school so popular and, you know, so prestigious in a way is all those great alums. And they also got to be in store for a women's basketball game, which we're going to get into. I know Sean McDonough was at least at that women's basketball game. I just saw a picture on X. Mike Tirico was with head coach Felicia Leggett-Jack at a practice this morning. Mike Tirico is the biggest cheerleader of everything Syracuse, especially that women's basketball team as well. He's got a connection there, and he always is supporting that team. But the men's team, let's lead off with that. They started off play for real, done with these exhibitions. And I mean, talk about just a refresh compared to what we saw last year in these first few games where they could barely beat the likes of a Loyola or a Youngstown State. Against Binghamton, the Orange dismantled them 85-47. A real commanding win for Adrian Autry's group. And Griffin, I think refresh is the best word to describe the game because it just felt like something new, something different, and something we didn't see last year in the early games whatsoever.
It felt right. Like it was normal. Like this is where Syracuse basketball should be. This is where the program should be. And it wasn't like Syracuse played its guys 35 minutes. It's not like Syracuse really had to try that hard. I mean, just set the tempo right away. A 10-0 run that stretched like 4 minutes. And that was what I was really impressed with. Syracuse just got off to a hot start. At the whistle, at the jump, Syracuse was playing with intensity on the defensive end, making Binghamton work for every single shot and keeping them scoreless for a good stretch of time. I was really impressed with how Syracuse just started the game and then just attacked the rim, played fast. This was just a win that, if you had last season at the start of the year, would have given you so much more confidence. This was not a close game against Lemoyne. This was not a double overtime game against Youngstown State. This was not a close game against Colgate. This was a domination against Binghamton. Yes, Binghamton might not be the team of Lemoyne or Colgate, but they're in that region of
They
smaller
handled business.
schools, handle business. And a 38-point win is a 38-point win. And if you're going to be taken seriously and if you want to go to the tournament, then you're going to have to beat Binghamton by 38. That has to be the standard.
I think that this game, for people who are just tuning in for the first time that might not have watched the exhibitions to see some of the new guys, I think this game cemented the fact that you can finally be excited about Syracuse basketball again. Look, there are so many guys you can cheer for on this team. It's not like last year where you wanted the same five guys, or maybe not even those five guys at all, to be on the floor the entire game. I mean, when you have Kyan Anthony coming into the game off the bench just 2 minutes into the game, and he gets a standing ovation, and you can just see that this team is going to be much, much different than last year. And I think the depth really showed in game number one. You had 13 guys, 11 of them got into the box score there. I mean, this was a team that was built to be a deeper team, and I think they absolutely showed it in game one.
They certainly did, and our hearts stopped right at the start of the game. I'm sure every Syracuse fan got really nervous when JJ Starling went down with an injury. It was looked to be a hamstring type injury. Right now, according to Mike Waters, he's listed as, or according to the university, actually, he's listed as questionable for Delaware State. I gotta say, maybe just sit him out for Delaware State. You know, if you handled against Binghamton, I think you should be able to handle Delaware State. You know, I don't think they should, you know, I don't want to say, oh, they shouldn't give you any problems, because last year, every team, it didn't matter who Syracuse was playing, everyone gave them some sort of problem. Of course, in game one against Binghamton, no problems, but hopefully that will carry over. So maybe Adrian Autry, just hold JJ out, because Kyan Anthony can play point guard pretty well. He was great filling in, or not point guard, but can play that guard spot pretty well. He was great filling in for Starling, 15 points. And you know, everyone was like, I don't want to say it, but oh, like these jumpers, these shots he's knocking down, looks like Carmelo Anthony. And I mean, I don't think you really got to walk around it. It makes total sense. And it was neat seeing Carmelo Anthony. He was working an NBC game, their studio coverage for the NBA on NBC. And it was neat seeing him watch Syracuse game. It's kind of publicity. We're talking about NBA publicity. Me and Griffin were, and we are, and Josh got in on this as well. You know how Syracuse in the NBA isn't really getting mentioned much, but that certainly is. Anytime a Syracuse game is on and a, you know, NBC happens to be broadcasting an NBA game, you kind of got a feeling they're going to bring up, oh, hey, you see Kyan did this or that, or maybe Syracuse gets a big win and Carmelo is celebrating. So I think that's kind of neat and some extra publicity for the team, especially if they are doing well. It could really really bring them to the national spotlight. And it was really fun seeing Kyan Anthony ball out. And I also got to bring up my guy, someone I we classified our guys last week. So be sure to listen to last week's episode if you want to hear the breakdown of why we picked these guys. I picked the center, William Kyle, and I just loved all these lobs every single time. Lob jam, lob jam, lob jam. I loved it. Reminded me of the Lob City Clippers, a team that I was a fan of when I was a kid because they dunked the ball so much. Fun, athletic, you know, vertical center that can really get up and down the floor. Just one of many pluses for Adrian Autry's group, I think.
Going back to that publicity point, it seems like Syracuse got more publicity because of Kyan from that Binghamton game than I think at any point last season.
Absolutely.
I mean, there was countless posts and countless
Yep.
posts of hundreds of thousands of likes on Instagram and Twitter of Kyan and Carmelo and Lala and just the whole family of what is happening with Kyan at Syracuse, and it's absurd. Like Bleacher Report, ESPN, SportsCenter, like all these different outlets are just posting
LeBron
Kyan
himself.
highlights. LeBron.
Yeah.
LeBron said nephew Kyan is doing
That's
well.
right. I forget they're related.
Well, I think it's
Well,
by like association, but anyways, I mean, and it's great for the program. It's great for the spotlight. Syracuse doesn't have any class of 2026 commits as of right now. But there are a couple five-star prospects. Jordan Smith Jr., who's a guard, he's also linked to Duke. Darren Ripley Jr., who's linked to some other schools around the area and some high-profile schools. Both of those guys are like top 10 prospects, and both have took visits to Syracuse in the past couple of months. And both have done multiple visits to Syracuse. And so that is the interesting thing. All this publicity, can it help Syracuse get a couple of high-level commits for the class of 2026? Obviously, with the success that they had against Binghamton, you like to see that carry on. I think you just got to compliment. You mentioned William Kyle. We mentioned Kyan Anthony. But how about Donnie Freeman and Nate George? I mean, Donnie Freeman, you saw what he did in limited time against Pace. And you're like, okay, is 22-9 going to be the standard? And in 26 minutes, Donnie had 20-6 with two blocks and a steal, shooting 7 of 11 from the floor. Like, that's efficient basketball. That's good basketball. And if Donnie's going to be the number one scorer on this team, which I think he can be, even if JJ Starling's in there, I think Donnie can be that different level of scorer that most teams don't have, a 6'9", 6'10", maybe even 6'11" big man that can play three levels of the game. That's different. And then Nate George, I mean, just talk about a player, complete point guard. He's big, 14 points, 5 steals, 8 assists. He can throw the lob, he can shoot, he can knock down a couple threes. I mean, this guy, if he was any different, I would say, if he was a little younger, like I'd be talking about this guy going into the NBA. And the fact that Syracuse could have this year and another year of Nate George is just making me smile.
Yeah, I think Donnie only played about 14 or 15 games last year. And I just think, even though it's game number one, it's already visible how much this team enjoys playing with each other. I think, I mean, even with the lobs and all the highlights and all that, like if you take that out, I still think these guys really enjoy playing with each other. And I mean, last year you talked about how the non-conference slate did not go Syracuse's way. After one game, you know, it's one game. I'd like to see more still. But I mean, you got Delaware State, and then you got Drexel and Monmouth before you have to play Houston and Kansas. I think before the season, if you would have said, you know, Syracuse is playing against Houston and Kansas in this, you know, tip-off classic in Vegas, Legends Classic, whatever it is, they have no chance. You know, if you look at the roster last year, yeah, they have no chance. I think they're already putting themselves in a position where Syracuse is going to go down with these teams that are ranked in the top 10 in the country, and they're going to compete. And it's because of guys like Donnie Freeman and Kyan Anthony and William Kyle and Nate George. I thought Nate George was absolutely outstanding in that game. So I think the publicity is great. I think how fluid the team is playing together is also great. And I'm very excited to see how this team continues to grow because they already look very close.
Yeah, you said it. It's just one game more to see from this team. But I think Donnie Freeman said it after the game that, yeah, this is an Adrian Autry type game, high intensity, getting up and down the floor. And you feel maybe Adrian Autry finally does have his roster, have his group of guys. Syracuse has another game at home before they take a trip to the great city of Philadelphia to play Drexel on November 15th. Griffin made a face. I don't know why. Before that game in Philly, they got Delaware State. It's at home. It's at 1 o'clock Saturday. I feel like maybe it'll be a really good crowd. 1 o'clock Saturday game. I think that's going to draw in a lot of people. And I think people maybe that didn't show out to Binghamton are going to be like, oh, like this team's for real. Let me check them out. You know, maybe before those tickets get crazy expensive in ACC play, who knows? But you know, I think we should we'll get some Ostrom picks. We didn't have them for Binghamton because Griffin couldn't pick, so we wanted to get it on a fresh slate where everybody could pick. As far as I know, Griffin can pick this Saturday. You'll see our picks. I think we can already kind of know where we're all going. But who knows? Maybe Delaware State will surprise us. Probably not. That's the verdict. 1 o'clock Saturday, WAAR's coverage gets going. 12:30 with McClure Remodeling countdown to tip off. Let's switch over to the women's side. I've been waiting to talk about Syracuse women's basketball and Felicia Leggett Jack's group. They started their season on Tuesday. Maybe not a dominant win over Stony Brook, but still a rather comfortable win. A 74-50 victory over Stony Brook. They had a great first quarter, and then Stony Brook kind of not got back into it, but maybe Syracuse took their foot off the gas just a little bit. But still, a lot to be impressed by in this one, Griff, from FLJ's group.
And I think you have to remember that this is a team that lost to St. Joe's and lost to UAlbany last year in non-conference play. And so a 25-point win, or however close that it was to that, to Stony Brook, 24-point win against Stony Brook, like that's something you can, I guess, be excited about. And I think the thing with this team is just there's more talent, overall talent, than there was last year. There's players that can make difference makers. And you mentioned Mike Tirico was at practice today. And, you know, I got to remember that his wife, Debbie, and Coach Jack played for Syracuse together. And I think that, you know, what Coach Jack also said when she posted that was like, not everyone knew who Mike Tirico was, which I thought was kind of funny. and I guess for people outside of this field is could be normal. But Coach Jack still played the bench. Like, she still didn't play anyone besides Layla Felia more than 25 minutes. And I think that's Coach Jack's philosophy. She still likes to play a lot of different players and try to still find out what lineups work so that when she has to kind of shorten her lineup, she knows what pieces are actually, what pieces fit well together, who plays well together, who is actually the strongest members of this team. And I think it shows. I think Uche, Zoje Uche, who is very good player, it's going to be a little bit of a hard transition for her to American basketball in the fact that she had four fouls in 15 minutes. Yeah. And I think that is where Josh was shaking his head at me, because she's really, really talented. 11 points, a couple rebounds, two blocks, a steal, 5 for 6 from the floor in 15 minutes. If she can stay on the floor, that just adds a whole different factor to Syracuse's both offense and defense.
Yeah, I will say this. I was at the game, actually, and I did go to the presser after, too. Felicia Leggett-Jack had nothing but great things to say about the team after the game. First of all, she had very high praise for Layla Felia. Last year, Syracuse did not have a point guard that was they did not have a starting point guard. It was kind of a rotation there at the end of the season. They didn't really know what they were going to do. And she goes out and gets a two-time all-conference player from the Big Ten. Layla Felia was at Michigan, then she went to Texas. But, you know, after the game, they asked her, and she said, as long as we have Layla Felia available, we have a chance in any game. You know, we're up 2, we're down 4, we're down 8. Like, it doesn't matter. So I thought that was very impressive. Felia was great in that game. She managed the floor very nicely. And then Uche Izoje, she said after the game, that is a Paige Beckers, Hannah Hidalgo-esque player. And she's not wrong. I mean, maybe a little lofty there on the comparison, but, I mean, Izoje in the paint, her footwork was unlike anything I had seen. I mean, she was fabulous in the paint. She finished, I mean, like you said, 5 of 6 from the field. She was very good in the post. And I think that's a very impressive start to the season. They were a little sloppy offensively. I think they could have won this game by 40 points. They did turn the ball over 22 times. And I also asked her after the game, I said, you know, this was the lowest single game 3-point percentage for your squad since you were the head coach. Does that worry you? Do you think that this team is going to be a primarily inside scoring team? She said, no. She dared teams to leave their shooters open. She said, we will hit shots. So she has a lot of confidence in what this group is going to do this season.
Certainly FLJ, or Felicia Leggett-Jack, is always, you know, bubbling with confidence. What I love about her so much and what makes her such a great coach. Another point I want to bring up, Shai Hawkins, player that I really found to be super talented in limited action last year in just her freshman year, 5 of 7 from the field, 13 points, a block and a steal. Can't get much better in terms of Hawkins. And I do wonder, maybe is she a player that could maybe creep into the starting lineup? She did log 21 minutes, so basically starter minutes. And then don't forget about the captain, Sophie Burrows, just 2 points, 1 of 8 shooting. You hope this is the type of game you don't see a lot from Burrows, because, you know, I think Sophie Burrows is a very talented player, but we saw last season it was a lot of ebbs and flows, ups and downs at times for her. especially in ACC play, it's a player Syracuse will certainly need to lean on if they want to get consistent wins. Felicia Leggett Jack's group continues non-conference play Friday night. You may be listening. The game may be on right now. Who knows? 7 o'clock, UAlbany inside the dome. Should, again, be another comfortable victory for the Orange.
This is a revenge tour from last year. They don't want to overlook UAlbany again.
True. Good point. That's something that they did do last season. But I'm basing it off the confidence that they showed us through game one. But who knows? That's another reason to tune in. I certainly have the confidence in the team to get the win. We'll see how it goes. And they got Canisius also Tuesday at home in the dome. And then Wagner. Plenty of home games to start off the year for Syracuse. And then they go out to Utah to play Utah on November 21st. And
they get Michigan, Philly's old squad.
Yep.
I think those games might be I think those games are in Connecticut.
They are, you're right.
For the good old Thanksgiving-esque tournament.
Yeah.
At what's the casino?
The casino. That's where the Sun play.
Yeah, Mohegan Sun.
There you go.
Good job. Never been. Can't say I've ever been. That's the schedule for Syracuse women's basketball. It's gonna be another exciting season, hopefully, for them rebounding after what was a poor year. Last year, again, UAlbany Friday, and at home for Syracuse women's basketball, looking to start the season off 2-0, and you know, all that's left to do. I mentioned men's soccer at this top. We don't have to get into it any further. Best of luck to Ian McIntyre's group. But the train rolls on to football. And unfortunately, this has been a train ride that has been quite bumpy and has gone off the tracks, to say the least. Since Steve Angeli went down against Clemson, this team is not won a game, and they didn't come anywhere close to winning a game on Halloween. I was there. I was just there as a fan. It was my probably last game as a fan, as a student at Syracuse, and it was the way I wanted to really go out. A really boring football game, not an entertaining football game. And I've sung Coach Fran Brown's praises since day one. I think, and I'm still think he's done an excellent job. He's turned this program around. But this was definitely the lowest moment. I don't know what the mindset was in starting Joseph Velarde. True freshman. This guy was committed to play lacrosse originally. Walks on. And, I mean, he just doesn't look like a Division I quarterback. And that's no disrespect to him. But it just does not look like he's a Division I quarterback. He was 4 of 18, 40 yards in the air. And this offense never looked like it was going to score. And then you put Luke Carney in for one drive and then take him out. Makes no sense. This Syracuse football team is lifeless at this point in the season.
I mean, you said he doesn't look like a Division I quarterback. Well, he's not a Division I quarterback. He's the Division I long pole who snuck his way onto the football team as probably a way for Coach Gate to get him to commit to Syracuse. And that's probably the story. That Coach Gate was like, hey, come play lacrosse at Syracuse, you know, if Coach Fran will even let you practice with the football team because you like to play football. You played football in Long Island in high school. And for him to start a game at Syracuse, you know, and I got to eat my words a little. I was in favor of Syracuse going with a different quarterback other than Ricky Collins.
Ja'Cari Williams.
That's my guy. And that guy's been my guy. But I think what Fran Brown did, he was like, okay, guys, everyone's asking for a quarterback other than Ricky. Well, here you go. And find out how it goes. And spoiler alert, it goes well. It does not go well. I was trying to do like broken English and it didn't work. It did not go well. Fran Brown doesn't have a quarterback. I mean, AJ, you said Syracuse didn't have a chance to win. Syracuse was winning at halftime.
I know.
It was 10-6.
That just shows how poor UNC is.
Well,
it didn't even feel like they were winning.
Because of a fumble recovery from Onward Sparrow and then a trip 40 field goal, and then Syracuse didn't put up a goose egg after that. Yep. I mean, it was just embarrassing. Like, Halloween night, the dome was not rocking.
It was empty. It was a terrible atmosphere.
My dad and my sister was there. My mom decided to not go to the game because she wanted to stay home. And credit to her, she made the right decision. Yeah. Like what is going on? I mean, and now we heard tonight, breaking news, that Ricky Collins is starting on Saturday. Fran said that at his had his dinner with Matt Park. And then So, I mean, that's the right decision. Like, Ricky should start. Ricky's the best quarterback on the roster. But, if Fran just really sent out these two freshmen just to prove a point, then come on. I get it. And, smart. Now you shut up all the haters asking for another quarterback. But if you're really trying to win games, why would you do that?
Griffin, I don't think he's even really shut up all the haters yet because I don't think a single hater was going, "Can we have Joe Filardi?" I think one, they either want to see Luke Kearney attempt a pass. I mean, every time Luke Kearney comes in the game, it's just to hand the ball off. Like, Griff, you can go out and do that if that's the case.
I don't know.
Or can we see Jakari Williams, AJ? Can we see Jakari Williams one time? Is he hurt? Like, what is the setback here? He played in the spring game, and I thought he was okay in the spring game.
I
Definitely
thought he was
good enough
great.
to at least, yes, definitely good enough to at least see some action right now. I was absolutely, my mind was boggled at the fact that Joe Filardi was not only started the game, but after they put Kearney in the second half, he came back in.
Came back.
It was just, and I was saying this during the game, is Ricky Collins really this bad that we're going to a quarterback that literally committed to the school to play lacrosse? So
Know.
I thought, Sparrow made a great play, and I think that if Ricky Collins was the starting quarterback in this one, I think we would have seen a different score. I haven't been the biggest Ricky Collins fan this year, but North Carolina is not a very good football team, and I think Ricky Collins could have used a game against a not very good football team to boost his confidence. He had a great game the week, well, not a great game, but he had a good game for his standards against Georgia Tech the week before. He had some good passes in that game, and I was really looking forward to see him continue, and then it didn't happen. So I am excited for him to be the starting quarterback out of all of the options. I think it is finally the right choice, Fran Brown, going back to his starter after Angeli went down. I'm excited to see Ricky again.
And Josh, I think you make a great point. Like, UNC wasn't good. Like, it's not like North Carolina was some juggernaut. Like, I do think if you rolled out a game plan with Ricky Collins or Luke Kearney that involved, like you said, that involved him actually throwing the football, you could have maybe won. Like, maybe not won, but like been in the game.
Oh,
UNC.
yeah, 100%. Does Fran know that, the ACC does not have a draft at the end of the year, and we won't get to pick the top transfer quarterback, although we need that, although Angeli being back will be much needed. But I don't understand the mindset. I mean, if we go 3-9 and our only ACC win is in Death Valley at Clemson, that will be unreal. But
That'll be like you look back 10 years and you're like, wow, what happened this season?
You'll be looking through the game logs and you'll be like, oh, win, win. Okay, lost to Tennessee, win, win. Oh, we beat Clemson. Oh, okay. So let's see what happened the rest of the way. Oh, we lost to North Carolina. That was the 1 year Bill Belichick was the coach. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing I'm most frustrated with Fran Brown. It just feels like this was the first time in his Syracuse tenure that he really just didn't roll out with any sort of a game plan. And then he follows that up with making a million changes to his coaching staff. He kind of
Oh, yeah.
reshuffles the whole deck, which I found really perplexing. And I don't get why you're doing this mid-season is beyond me, but it just feels like you look at last year, it was all sunshine and rainbows. You had a bad loss to Pitt. You had just a wacky game against Stanford. Outside of that, it was just you were smooth sailing the whole season. Everything seemed great. And this year, it really feels like I'm not doubting his coaching ability, but it kind of seems like he's lost the reins a little bit, Griffin. That he isn't maybe the head coach that we all think he is, or the game manager that we think he is. I don't know if I'm putting the right word on it, but this UNC game was the first one where I was like, I understand you don't have your starting quarterback and you don't have the roster you had last year. But I feel like you still could have beat this North Carolina team at home.
Well, I agree. I think if Ricky Collins plays this game and that fumble recovery still happens, I think Syracuse wins. And I don't think that's a crazy outlandish take. And well, it might be, all things considered.
But
But
Griff, I don't want to cut you off. I want to go back to what you're saying, but even if you're at halftime and you see that your quarterback is 2 for 13, and you put Ricky Collins in to start the second half, that's not going off in his head.
I think Fran Brown decided before the game that Ricky Collins is taking a good old seat on the bench for the whole game and just deciding to roll out these two fresh, well, one and a half, I guess you can call Luke Kearney a freshman because he played one drive and got sacked and had a rush and handed the ball off a couple times. I think the well, AJ, you said if Fran Brown isn't the decision maker people thought he, and I don't think many people thought he's the decision maker. He's not a game manager, and I think to this point it's been pretty evident. I mean, Syracuse wastes timeouts in the first and third quarter like me eating. I was gonna say tater tots, but I haven't eaten tater tots in years.
you Fran, eating Core Life.
Exactly. Me eating Core Life. Shout out Core Life. Not a sponsor. But Fran wastes timeouts. They take way too many delay of game penalties. Like, there's just dumb decisions that happen for on this team. And I'm not saying it's any one particular person's or player's fault. But you just look at the way that this team is led this year and compare it to last year, and it's just like, did Kyle McCord really make that big of a difference? And the answer is yes, but the answer is also like what is this team's plan? I mean, Fran Brown said that no quarterback besides Steve Angeli knows the offense. And Steve Angeli got to Syracuse in the spring. After the spring game, Ricky Collins has been here before the spring game, and Fran said that he doesn't know how to run the offense. I mean, that's a little concerning. And switching Michael Johnson and Nunzio Campanelli, like, what does that do? Nunzio Campanelli just helps Kyle McCord lead the nation in passing yards. Like, what? Michael Johnson coach tight ends. Nunzio Campanelli was a tight ends coach under Dino Babers. So, like, are we going back to that regime? Josh Gattis gonna lead the offense now? What's the difference between Josh Gattis and Jeff Nixon? Are the two of them just overlapping? Like, what is going on? I think there's way too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah, I was saying that at the start of the year. I mean, this is coming off Syracuse, one of their best seasons in program history. I was thinking Jeff Nixon is eventually going to go to the NFL because of how good of a job he did last year. I mean, you had four receivers with 50 or more catches. You had 2,000-yard receivers. You had LaQuinn Allen, who had, you know, all the rushing and receiving yards in the world. And then you had Kyle McCord set the nation's leading passing yard mark. And so I was thinking, you know, Fran goes out and he gets Josh Gattis, who's coached at all of these schools. They're going to have a tough year, but they're going to have another solid year. And then Nixon will depart for the NFL. And then Gattis will just seamlessly slide into that OC role that he's worked at Alabama and Maryland and Miami and Penn State and all these places. And, you know, Fran's going to have these guys set up. Well, the reality of it is, I don't know if anyone on this coaching staff is capable of coaching the offense. I mean, it has been an absolute train wreck this year, to say the least.
Yeah, and it's just crazy. You look at last season, and now you flip it to this season, a complete 180. And again, I know the roster's not as talented, and I still think Fran Brown is qualified enough to be the head coach, and he should still be the head coach. I still believe in him that he'll get this right next year. But this season, there's a lot of question marks, especially this UNC game. You're scratching your head, and you're just asking questions like, what was the game plan? What was the strategy going into this one? And that certainly was the question against UNC. And now they go to Miami to play the Hurricanes, which was last season's biggest moment. And I highly doubt they'll replicate something like that. If they do, that would be outstanding. With Ricky Collins under center, I have a feeling we're going to see him kind of like Georgia Tech under center the entire game. Fran Brown did mention midweek that Luke Kearney is going to redshirt this year. He can play one more game. He can see action in one more game. But after that, he'll max up at 4, and that'll be it for Luke Kearney, which I think is a good thing. Here's the thing. I have no idea how good of a quarterback Luke Kearney is because you've barely seen him throw the football. So hopefully, you know, next year or another year down the line, you'll actually get to see him play legit football, because you just haven't seen it this year. Because another head-scratching thing is he's just been used in such odd ways every time he's gone into a game. Miami Griffin, they're playing for their lives. I mean, they're basically playing to get in the ACC title game as the only way into the playoffs for the Hurricanes. And the expectation for Miami this season was, of course, to be in the playoffs to win the ACC. It looked like it was going to happen, but then they stumble up against Louisville, a 24-21 loss, and then another shock loss at SMU, 26-20. I'm a little worried for Syracuse because I think Miami's going to play with a lot of urgency, a lot of aggressiveness right from the get-go because they know they have to go undefeated if they want any shot at a playoff.
It was just a couple weeks ago, probably 4 or 5 weeks ago, where Carson Beck was top of the Heisman favorite list. Yep. Like, he was there. Miami was top five nationally, and then they've lost some bad games. And, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say it. There is no way Syracuse beats Miami. And if you know, you know. And when I said that last year and Syracuse ended up beating Miami, I ate my words then, and I won't have to do it now, thankfully, because there is truly no way that Syracuse beats Miami. They're 28.5 dogs. Although Hard Rock is a joke of a college football stadium because it's an NFL stadium, and it's like an hour away from Miami's campus.
Which is crazy. I know someone that goes to Miami and has never been to a game because of that travel. Anyway.
And it just doesn't make sense that a school like Miami doesn't have a football stadium on their campus. But whatever. As much as I like to make fun of Miami for being kind of a fake athletics school, like you always thought, oh, like it's Miami, they're always good. No, not really. We're past the days of oh God, I'm losing it. Jimmy Johnson and
Michael Irving.
Michael Irving, yeah. There we go. I got there. But now I back to the point I was gonna say is, you know, even Syracuse this week made some headlines because they flipped a Florida State commit to Darius Hughes. And a 4-star Florida State commit who goes to the same high school as Calvin Russell, the 5-star from a Miami Northwestern out there in Miami. And who knows, they'll probably both be at this game watching Syracuse lose for the fifth time this season because, I mean, it seems like Calvin Russell is in Syracuse every other weekend, which is good.
We want to keep him up here.
Yes. If he's here, that means he's not torn any other schools. And a big shout out to Calvin Russell. I mean, this guy is committed to Fran Brown, and shout out to Fran Brown for getting a guy that's great.
We criticize Fran Brown, praise him here, absolutely.
Yeah, for getting a guy like Calvin Russell to stay committed to Syracuse. And who knows, maybe he'll bring some of his other teammates. There's a couple of those Miami Northwestern guys that are pretty good and either commit to other schools or uncommitted. But that's me, my recruiting
analysis.
Geek out of the week. So I'll leave it there. I mean, I'm probably going to take Miami spread, although 28.5 is a lot.
This is a lot.
And Carson Beck is looking like prime Carson Beck, where he shows that he can do a little and then he falls off a cliff. So I don't know. I don't really know what to think. This might be a game time decision for me.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. When the season started and you looked at this schedule, the amount of ranked teams and the amount of teams that Syracuse was playing that was in the college football playoff a season ago, and Miami was one of those teams – or Miami was not one of those teams, sorry. Shout out Devin Grant. this is the fifth team. Colgate doesn't really matter here, but this is the fourth team that Syracuse is going to play in nine games that is coming directly off a loss. Now, this worried a lot of Syracuse fans when they went down to Clemson because they were like, wow, there's no way that we're going to beat – they're going to beat Clemson coming off a loss. And they did that. So I just think Miami, like you said, they're playing for the rest of the season. I don't think there's a shot in any world where Syracuse makes this a remotely close game. I think Fran Brown will be perfectly fine shaking Mario Cristobal's hand after the game, knowing that he did successfully end his season last year. And I think he will be happy to move forward with a 1-1 record, and he can go get him next time when he has a healthier roster. I think Syracuse is going to get blown out, quite frankly.
Yeah, you don't know what to expect now with the Syracuse team. I hope the offense shows improvement, you know, because there's talented receivers on this team, and I kind of feel for them because they've just kind of been drowned out because there seems to be no offensive game plan, and it's a merry-go-round of who's under center at quarterback. It's a season that's winding down for Syracuse. After Miami, they're off for a week, a much-needed bye week. This is a bye week that I'm sure a lot of people would have liked a little sooner. I think it could have helped Syracuse out a little bit. After the bye week, you got Notre Dame. Doesn't get any easier. Then you wrap things up with Boston College at home. But it's Syracuse, Miami, in Miami. Kind of jealous that I'm not making the trip out there. It would be kind of fun to go to Miami. But it isn't, like, super cold yet, so I'd rather make that trip for basketball. Anywho, Syracuse, Miami, 3:30 in Miami, like I just mentioned. That means 3 o'clock WAR gets going with McClurg Remodeling countdown to kick off for a 3:30 kickoff. This was fun. I love when we get crossover. We're talking Syracuse men's and women's basketball, and we're still talking football. We'll do it all again next week. Talk maybe a little less football because they got that bye week, but who knows? Maybe they upset Miami, and we got a whole lot to talk about. That's the glory of sports. You never know, and that's what makes the Ostrom Avenue podcast so good, is there's a new episode every week that breaks down all this fun stuff, all that basketball and football as well. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to get previous episodes wherever you get your podcast or at WAER.org. But until then, we will see you next week.